funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What compels us to do what is right, even when it's not easy? And why at other times do we make choices we know are morally questionable? My guest this hour worries a lot about the amount of greed and selfishness in today's America, but he is not convinced that we were much better off in the good old days when we gauged our own morality according to a set of inflexible rules, enforced as much by fear of damnation as by a genuine desire for integrity. John Bradshaw is an author, lecturer, and counselor, well known for a series of specials he hosted for PBS. He writes about his ideas for making ourselves better people in his new book, Reclaiming Virtue, How We Can Develop the Moral Intelligence to Do the Right Thing at the Right Time for the Right Reason. John, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Of the three concepts in your subtitle, doing things for the right reason might be the hardest one to pin down. Will you start by talking about what the right reason is?
Well, that would be the hardest one to talk about. And what I've argued in the book, you know, Hal Gardner wrote a book in 84 called Frames, in which he described what he called multiple intelligences, that we tend to focus in school on literary and mathematical intelligence, but we have a lot more intelligence. We have spatial intelligence and musical intelligence and interpersonal. So I am arguing in this book that we have clearly an innate moral intelligence, and that that innate moral intelligence is composed of a program that's set up to have us bond with a significant source figure, providing we get the proper nourishing, the proper motherese, somebody called it. And that we have nine innate feelings that are the primary motivators of our life. That raw moral intelligence centers around five areas: being fair, punishing cheaters, and that may be different from culture to culture, but anthropologists show that every culture has some form of fairness and punishment, harming no one, and helping whenever needed. Now, that may be mostly in terms of the tribe, because loyalty to the tribe or loyalty to the community is another one of the, what I would call, the colors of moral intelligence. And then respecting authority, like when Sinead O'Connor tore up a picture of the Pope, she was booed off the stage, or when they made these cartoons of Muhammad. And the last one is purity, cleanliness. That there's a limit to what people can handle in terms of kind of grossness or pornography or things like that. So those would be the five colors of moral intelligence. Our nine innate emotions begin with interest or curiosity, and then the most important one for morality is shame, which is an emotion that lets us know that we're limited, that we're perfectly imperfect human beings, and that we're finite. So that Nietzsche, the German philosopher, could say shame is the source of spirituality, that shame safeguards the spirit. In other words, it lets us, it keeps us in our place. Shame is also the affect that is the core of guilt, which is really moral shame. So guilt is the guardian of our conscience. We have those innately. In fact, Darwin thought that what distinguished us from the other animals was shame. And so did Soloviev, the Russian writer. He says, this is what makes us human. It's our permission to be human, our finitude. So these would be the motivating reasons that are involved in what we call our moralities. Now, they may have differences in different places. And, of course, in a war, for example, one country believes that it is fighting for its God or its rights, while another one believes they are fighting for their God or their rights. The terrorists think we're the great Satan, and we think they're the great Satan. So there's a lot of conflict that happens with our raw moral intelligence. That is, there's a horrible tendency to make us good and the other ones bad.
Does a moral person always know what's right in every situation?
No, that's the whole point of the book. The book is about Aristotle's virtue called phronesis, which is translated as prudence. Now, we've lost that virtue in modern times. People think prudence means you avoid helping the woman who's getting beat up. Somebody will say, oh, that was prudent not to stop at that wreck. Whereas for the ancients, prudence was right reasoning in things to be done. It was a practical knowledge. And Aristotle broke with Plato on this. He went back to Heraclitus and Democritus, two earlier pre-Socratic philosophers, both of whom said, Democritus said, there are those that know what is good who do not study. That is, there are some people that are just naturally good. You can have a moral theologian, who's a very famous theologian, I'm not going to go into the details, but he was known for his womanizing. Yet he was one of the, you know, leading theologians of his time. So knowing what virtue is, Aristotle says this, knowing what just is far different than being just. Would you rather be just or know what justice is? So the virtue that allows us to do the perfection of moral intelligence is the virtue of prudence. And it is also the essence of all the virtues and becomes, in effect, a situation conscience. That is, we have to have an informed conscience, but how do we apply it in every different, unique, changing, contingent situation? That's why I wrote this book. In fact, it was Professor Carney at SMU that suggested that I expand a paper that I did at Rice on this into a book. And I've been trying to write this book for about 40 years.
Why does it matter, John, if people do things for the wrong reason, as long as their actions are appropriate? Why should we make that distinction, and what makes it so critical?
Well, I think sometimes we don't know. I mean, Aristotle said that the last act of a moral judgment is based on affective inclination. What that means is it's based on emotional intelligence. We know that if you damage a part of the brain, Antonio Damasio wrote a book called Descartes' Error, and he showed that if a part of the brain is damaged, you can't make a choice. So a person could make a good choice for a wrong reason. That is, it would have good consequences. One of the things you're getting at here is what I'm trying to get at in this book is the mystery of the moral life, that there's a certain mystery to it. Heraclitus says, we step and do not step into the same river. Well, that, for a long time, nobody knew what in the world is this guy babbling about. But I have the story of Johnny Pagnini in this book, who was a guy that saved a girl from being raped. He saw her being beaten in the back of a car on the San Diego freeway. And then he saw her legs come out of the car and thought they were going to throw her out on the highway. So he began driving at 90 to 100 miles an hour and spent 4 hours chasing these guys down. I had him on my TV show as a hero, but if I had done that, I would have probably killed 30 people myself, and it would have been ruthless. So for one person, an act can be virtuous. For another, it might be ruthless. That's why we need a virtue that is not relativism, that is not a situation ethics, but is like a situation conscience.
And virtue requires strength. Where does that strength come from?
It comes from inside of us through repetition and habituation. You know, in the book, I have 10 magnificent moral moments. Mm-hmm. And each one of those moral moments, like one of them is one of Lincoln's speeches, and one of them is Thoreau refusing to pay his poll tax. One of them is Hugh Thompson, the helicopter pilot, who save the boy out of the ditch at My Lai and confronted Lieutenant Callie. So each one of those stories involve a source of moral intelligence. Over our life, probably the most important source that will help us to internalize the virtue is example. You know, saying to parents over and over again, don't tell them, do it. Do it yourself. Walk the walk that you talk and stop all the sermonizing and the preaching, because they're going to do what you do. Carl Jung, one of his most famous statements was, the most damaging thing to any child is the unlived life of the parents. And what he meant by that was the woundedness of the parents. Father has a disappointed baseball career, so he tries to make his son into a baseball player. But it's also like people will not be successful because their parents weren't successful. In other words, they internalize their parents. So the most important thing is going to be being around people who are virtuous. Aristotle said, if you want to know what virtue is, go find a virtuous person and watch and see what they do. So it's much more about doing. I mean, here we are in a world where every major symbol of authority, the priesthood, the ministry, and it isn't just the Catholic priests, because I have worked with quite a number of different congregations. The army, $2 billion in lawsuits for rape. The politicians, the police brutality, the constant hypocrisy of these politicians. Where does a young kid go? And I end the book with this, the loneliness.
And let me stop you right there, John. We will talk about this in a minute, but we need to take a quick break. John Bradshaw is with us. His book is called Reclaiming Virtue, How We Can Develop the Moral Intelligence to Do the Right Thing at the Right Time for the Right Reason. We'll resume our conversation with John in a moment. You're welcome to join us at 1-800-933-5372. You are also welcomed and encouraged to join the station as a supporting member.
800-456-5372. It's 800-456-5372 is the number to call to do that. Or, of course, you can do it online at kera.org. And when you join at the $120 membership level, we would love to thank you with a copy of John Bradshaw's book, Reclaiming Virtue. The book is just out. I believe it publishes today or yesterday. It just came out. It's fresh off the printing press. And, of course, you can get it at any book retailer or online retailer that you choose.
And
it's
fact,
out there.
John's in town next week at Legacy Books in Plano.
Exactly. He'll be here to sign books and speak next, I think it's a week from Saturday. Mm-hmm. So you can find out about that on the KERA Think page. But, you know, we'd love to be able to thank you at the $120 membership level with your very own copy of the book and a whole year of great radio and great interviews on Think for you to enjoy.
It takes such a very short time to take care of this. If you've never joined before, you might be pleasantly surprised. You call 1-800-456-5372, and the folks on the phone can get you squared away, usually in just about 2 minutes. You can go online and do it just as fast as your little fingers can type. We would encourage you to become a member because you know the difference in public radio. 1-800-456-5372 is our number. I want to say thanks to folks like Danny Buck in Dallas, Mary Dollins in Pottsboro, Monjur on Wari in Irving, Rebecca Cannon in Azle, and Gardner Cleaves in Dallas. We would love to be able to thank you on the air. Just give us a call at 1-800-456-5372.
800-456-KERA, online at kera.org. This is your public radio station, and you listen to it. It's listener-supported, so call now, 800-456-5372, or contribute online at kera.org. It doesn't take a whole lot. You can do $5 a month. You can do $10 a month. You get excellent content 24/7, and this is what your contribution pays for. And thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. John Bradshaw is my guest. He will be in town at Legacy Books in Plano on Saturday, May 9th. You can find information about the appearance at legacybooksonline.com. If you'd like a copy of John's book and you'd like to support KERA, you can make a $120 contribution now at 1-800-456-5372. The book is called Reclaiming Virtue: How We Can Develop the Moral Intelligence to Do the Right Thing at the Right Time for the Right Reason. And our phone number is 1-800-933-5372 to join the conversation. John, before we broke, you were talking about the idea that we need to surround ourselves with virtuous people who may or may not be the traditional authority figures that we've all been told about.
Absolutely. And that I think that at the turn of the century, we were dealing with the collapse. I mean, from the Nuremberg trials on, there was a rejection of pure, absolute, totalistic obedience and the emergence of conscience, that conscience supersedes what I call a culture of obedience or obedience without content. Now, in the ethic of virtue that I'm presenting in this book, I believe in the virtue of obedience and that it's a critically important virtue to learn. But I think at the turn of the century, we were seeing a lot of sense, and we see it. We see it in our youth because adolescents tend to act out what they find in their culture, and there's a kind of moral loneliness that I think that youngsters are feeling. I've taught high school for 6 years. I ran a drug program in Los Angeles for 6 years. I've had a lot of experience with adolescents. I see them today as really, really looking for good people. And in a sense, since some of the symbols of authority have failed, it can be mom and dad and Uncle Joe and grandpa and some of the people I've known in my life, a pharmacist that I wrote about in the book and a mailman. Their commitment to duty and their love of their work and their character, which, you know, is not about being famous or making a lot of money. It's about soul. It's about something deep within a person. And we desperately need that. And I wrote this book because of my own struggles. I blatantly share my own addictions and how I've been sober 43 years, but I struggle with alcoholism. I've struggled with sexual addiction for 6 years. I've been sober 27 years from that. And it's not I was lost and now I'm found. It's just that I never could seem to find a middle ground. And what virtue is finding the mean. It's that intelligence that lets us know how to choose the mean between extremes, that I choose something that allows me to not polarize. And what I see in the world right now is a terrible amount of polarization from Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, as if these were diseases people have. It just astonishes me, and it kills any kind of dialogue, and it always is indicative of a kind of shame when people polarize. They try to be more than human or less than human or make themselves better. So I wrote this book as much for me, although I started writing it before 9/11, and I realized, you know, and a lot of things happened around from 9/11 on. A lot of the acting out of the Catholic clergy and some of the military lawsuits, incredible amount of money, and then internet cyber sex is $19 billion. I forget what my buddy at at the Meadows said that 19,000 new stations every month or something like that. It's uncanny, and it's shameless. And, you know, there's just a call to virtue. And what's so good about virtue is that one act, it's like John Holt said, somebody's learning to play the cello. So you say you're learning to play the cello. And then he says, no, they're not learning to play the cello. They're playing the cello. They're just not playing it well. Virtue is any time I make an act of kindness, I am being virtuous. I may not have the full range of virtue yet, but it's simple. You act yourself into a right way of being rather than try to think yourself into a right way of acting. It calls for action. When I first sobered up, there was a little card that said, do one thing today that no one will ever find out about, one kindness or some kind of helping. And I've been doing that for 43 years. It is one of the most powerful things I know to increase your own internal strength so that you're not easily moved by the outside. See, when you think of people shooting Kool-Aid, poison Kool-Aid down their children's throats, or you see people that follow these sect leaders, they have no internal strength. They have not developed virtue. It has all come from the outside of them. So morality is 25 beliefs that you obey without question and without murmuring and without a sad face is a kind of a culture that we've got to change. In 1679, they did a synod of the wisest people in Boston and the clergy, all the top clergy. And they came out with a list of the sins. And the sins were teenage pregnancy, frivolous lawsuits, inordinate greed and profit-taking and business. But the worst sin of all was the family was going to hell in a handbasket. There was no discipline. Now, that's 1679. So we got to ask ourselves, are those dogmas or what people, you know, just want to pout, you know, lecture and stuff down children, that may not be the way to go. The way to go may be an environment, an example, and showing by your example, your conscience, that you will not cheat. All of those things are much more important than what we say. I mean, we've said all along, actions speak louder than words. Well, nowhere is that more important than here, that the rule is the good person. And we know who a good person is. We know when we're around one. And sometimes we get fooled. But I'm never fooled by, like, the governor of New York, because anybody that's protesting too loud, John Sanford says, deliver me from people who want to be good, because they protest so loud about being good that they're not looking at their dark side. They're not looking at their shadow side. And there's a balance there. Good people do it. They don't have to have it publicized. Anytime you tell people about your goodness, you lose it. So it becomes a very important thing. And all of us can think of somebody in our life who was quiet, who was moderate, who was purposeful, that impacted us. I had a sixth-grade baseball coach. He took us to see the Pride of the Yankees. He didn't lecture to us about loyalty or commitment, but that movie I'll never forget, and I'll never forget the moment. This is what I call in the book the moral imagination, how stories help so much. It's why I love public radio, public television, that we're offering people other things than just sort of structured, controlled programming, and allowing people to have an experience. Experience is another important source of moral intelligence. But it's good habits. It's learning to do something and experiencing the joy of it and then doing it again because you experience the joy of it. Right appetite, the Buddhists say. Well, so did Aristotle. And then I have a section in the book on the moral brain, and this is what blew me away, is that the neuroscientists are absolutely validating what Aristotle said 400 years before Christ, that the final act of moral judgments are usually gut level. Philippa Foote did a famous thing called the trolley problem. And it's a trolley is a runaway trolley will kill five people if you don't pull a switch, which will put it on another track where it will kill one person. They did that. They presented that dilemma to 200,000 people on the internet. Men, women, every religion, octogenarians, teenagers. Almost everyone said it's moral to pull the switch. Then they ask, the trolley's out of control, can I throw an old woman on the track? 99% said no, you can't throw the, it's not moral to throw the old woman on the track, even though the logic is the same. You kill one person, you save five.
We just somehow all understand that that's not okay.
What?
We just somehow all understand that that's not something that you could do.
Yeah, in other words, that's what I call the gut level feeling or felt thought. The same kind of thought that goes into poetry.
Let me stop you right there because we need to take another quick break and we'll talk about the felt thought in a moment. John Bradshaw is my guest. His new book is called Reclaiming Virtue, How We Can Develop the Moral Intelligence to Do the Right Thing at the Right Time for the Right Reason. We will take more of your calls or your calls for John in a moment. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. We would love to send you a copy of John Bradshaw's new book, Reclaiming Virtue. It's available as a thank you gift when you join the station at the $120 level or above. Of course, you can buy the book anywhere. Jeff and I always say this. You are welcomed and encouraged if you're interested to go pick it up. But if you also want to support KERA, it's the perfect confluence of events. You can give us a call at 800-456-5372. Make that $120 pledge and it's yours.
800-456-KERA, online at kera.org. All the books that were written by guests on the show the last 2 weeks are still available. You can see those at kera.org as well. You can see all the different thank you gifts. We just hope that somewhere there's an incentive for you to go ahead and finally pick up that phone and call 800-456-5372 or contribute online. We've been talking to you for a number of days about this during this day part. And during this show, and we'd really like to wrap this drive up. I would really like to get this drive over with, and I know you would too, as a listener. I mean, I'm a listener too, and Chris, when I leave the station and go about my business as a person out in the wild, I listen to KERA. I know you do as well, and we, you know, folks, we want the drive to end too. So please go ahead and make your contribution right now.
1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. We are getting close to the $190,000 mark left to raise. We are collecting gifts from people and contributions at all levels. We are receiving a large number of big contributions from folks who want to become a friend at the $1,500 level or $5,000 or a different amount than that. What's interesting to me is that sometimes people sort of wait for that moment in their life where they feel like they've arrived. But more and more, there are younger people who are saying, I will contribute to something that I really care about, as opposed to, you know, buying another bracelet or doing something like that. You make the choice to, in sort of echoing back what John was talking about, to create an experience that matters to you. And we think public radio is an experience. We know it matters to you because you listen to us all the time. You're with us when we have these really interesting discussions.
And you're with us on, you know, on technically day, is it day 14 of the membership campaign?
Stop counting.
We've been on the air for you know, this is the second week, and you're still with us. You're still listening. You're still getting something out of the programming. And those of you who have joined, those of you who have called, thank you so much. You know we're not speaking to you any longer. David Dwell is on that list. He's in Watauga. John Fritz in Dallas. Martin Isles is in Denton. He's on that list. Jessica Schnorf in Garland is on the list. Susan Harper in Fort Worth, she's on the list of people who know that we're no longer asking asking her, just like Karen Bloom in Dallas. Hey, Karen, we're not asking Karen to call anymore because Karen's called 800-456-5372 or contributed online at kera.org. We would love for you to do your part because with your participation and you and you and you and you and you and all the rest of you, we can wrap the drive up, get it over with, get back to the regular schedule, and we won't be doing this next week.
Please don't think for a moment that your contribution does not make a difference or that there is someone else out there who's going to do it for you. We are here because people have decided to be responsible for public radio. If you're someone who's never given, consider this, and you listen all the time, consider that if everyone else was just like you, public radio would not be here. We are here because people decide to take a stand for something that they feel is worth supporting. Please give us a call at 1-800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org. Make that contribution and know that every minute that you listen to the radio, you will hear your money at work.
Everyone has a job to do, Chris. Everyone listening, everyone here at the station, everyone has something that they're responsible for. And some days those jobs are harder than other days. And quite honestly, one of the hardest things that we have to do here at KERA is go on the air and convince you to pay for something that we give you for free. We make it available to you. You use it. It's totally free. And then we go on the air and we say, please, please pay for it. And it's really ironic because it's one of the easiest things to do is to pay for it. When you call 800-456-5372, when you go on to the Safe and Secure donation site at kera.org, it takes a couple of minutes. It's as affordable as you want it to be. You can totally plan it out so that it's within your budget. We're not asking you to go into debt to help support the station. We're just asking you to contribute something, something at whatever level is appropriate and comfortable for you.
Well, and here's the reality, Jeff. It's actually not free. It doesn't come about for no money at all. It's almost like standing outside, like if you were at, at the Smirnoff Center and you were standing right outside the gates and you could hear a concert without buying a ticket. That doesn't mean that it didn't cost money to put that concert on or that everybody else inside the gates didn't pay for a ticket. It simply means that you're able to access that sound without paying for it. We're aware of that reality, but we're here to tell you that we're set up for the people who are inside the concert hall who have bought their tickets. We're not trying to make you feel bad if you absolutely can't afford $5 or $10 a month. We understand that, but the vast majority of us living in the world can do that, and we so appreciate and admire the ones who decide to do it even though we can't look you in the eye and ask for it. 1-800-456-5372 is the number, or you can go online to kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with author, lecturer, and counselor John Bradshaw. We're talking about his newest book, Reclaiming Virtue. John, I want you to finish your thought on felt thought, and then there are so many people, including an emailer named Jim, who want the chance to interact with you in a moment. So,
okay. And by the way, I was thinking that people could start their life of virtue by sending in a contribution to your program.
Hear, hear. Thank you.
The idea of felt thought is, for example, when music moves you, when you have chills down your back, or poetry. Poetry says in its own way what can't be said by the logical brain. So felt thought comes from the non-dominant hemisphere of the brain, which, by the way, is the only thing that's fully operational in the first 3.5 years of our life, which is why attachment is such a critical issue, the attachment bond, the empathic bond between the mother and the child. But when we have been moved by a great concert or a great poem, it is felt thought. And we now understand through the work of Sylvan Tompkins that feelings are farms of thought. They're a different way of thinking than logic is, but they are farms of thought. So that a beautiful moral act is like a work of art. It has that same impact on us. is why I started the book with Magnificent Moral Moments and why I tell stories, that we have always been moved by stories, but not at the logical level. I mean, the Bible is filled with parables and stories and religious thought. The great Paul Tillich used to say, all religion is symbolic because you can't analyze and dissect the divinity, that it's much more about symbol and metaphor. But what we found is that in those areas I was talking about, a man named Jonathan Haidt at the University of Virginia talked about those five universal areas, like the five colors of moral intelligence: harm no one, help people, respect authority, be fair, be loyal to your group, and purity. And he did an experiment where he offered people lots of money to do certain situations. For example, in the area of being fair, he asked people if they would accept a TV stolen by a thief from a wealthy family. And most people said they wouldn't, but that they would accept a TV that had gotten to somebody by a computer error, by computer error, that it wasn't stolen. In other words, it didn't involve fairness or cheating. They said, "Would you, if you were in a play, would you slap a priest in the face or a holy person?" Most people said they wouldn't do it. Even if they offered, but they would do it with a friend. So there would be the respect for authority. And he has a whole number of these, and he stuff by saying we carry out our lives as though our moral judgments are based on reason, but in fact we act on gut feelings and make up reasons post hoc, that people will then make up reasons why they did things. So it doesn't mean that it's subjective or what we call relative or situational morality. It means we can educate the emotions. That's what my book is about. It's a whole new approach to moral education, taking into account moral imagination, experience, emotional intelligence, educating the emotions, and then above all, educating the will, that we now know that that thinking can change the brain, that free will is a physical force. Jeffrey Swartz at UCLA is doing 80% healing of people with obsessive-compulsive disorders by showing how the mind can change the brain, can literally create new neuronal patterns in the brain.
It's really amazing. We have an email here from Jim who asks about the difference between shame and humility. Can you talk about that?
Well, humility is a form of shame. See, there's a good shame. There's an HDL shame, and there's an LDL shame. Unfortunately, in English, we only have one word for shame. Every other language has two words. But humility is shame at a higher level of development. I mean, a child is born with just a raw sense of shame, so that it means that they feel exposed. It's almost like we have to raise children like we do film. We have to keep them in a dark room. We have to be their boundaries and keep them from being overexposed when they're not ready to be exposed. It's okay. Children are going to have shame, and parents can say, "Oh, I see you're feeling shame about it." As we grow, that shame becomes modesty, it becomes guilt, it becomes humility, it becomes awe and reverence in the face of mystery, and finally it becomes the numinous, the experience of the sacred, that which is so overwhelming to us, and we realize how little and finite we are. So there's a good shame. I have a book called Healing the Shame That Binds You, and I've just recently revised it and really made those distinctions clearer than when I first wrote it in 1989.
We have time probably for one quick call, and that comes from Michael in Fort Worth. Hi, Michael.
Yes, hi.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Oh, okay. Now, John, you made a statement that kind of perked my ears up because I've said of myself to a prospective wife, I'm a good man, a moral man. You made the statement that if you say you're good, you take away from your goodness. And would you expand on that a little, please? I might have a question. It's just a curiosity.
Well, I think if you really believe, I mean, I had a terrible time in the beginning promoting my own work because somehow I felt that I was bragging. And when I grew up, I was told and shamed a lot because my parents and many parents thought that shaming was a good way to raise children. We now know that it's a terrible way to raise children. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I want to be a good man, and I'm being as good a man as I'm conscious of right now. And one of the things in my book I call the ultimate moral question is learning about your shadow, which is the side of you that you don't like to look at. And there is... I have a number of exercises in there that help people to really get in touch. It's not all bad. The shadow's not all bad. It's the real you, but it's also some stuff that maybe you don't want to own. Like I cheated on an exam when I was studying to be a Catholic priest, and we were on our honor. And I remember stealing from a grocery store when I was a kid as a grocery checker and thinking I had a right to steal because we were poor. Well, some of those things I don't want to keep in mind, and if I hear of somebody stealing, I may project my shadow on them and gossip and talk about them and blame them. I mean, there's an incredible amount of shadow projection in politics. We hear these guys condemning one of the others, and then suddenly we find out about their background. So the more I can own myself, good and bad, warts and all, then I can say this is who I am. I am proud of what I've done. I'm proud of the TV shows. I'm proud of my number one New York Times bestsellers. I'm very proud of that. My life has been graced, and I want to continue to be a good man. I see nothing wrong with that.
Really interesting stuff in the book, John. I so appreciate you spending the hour with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and good luck to you and your drive. And everybody, make a donation. You've started your life of virtue.
Thank you so much. John Bradshaw's new book is called Reclaiming Virtue. He will be in town at Legacy Books in Plano on Saturday, May 9th for a 3 p.m. appearance. You can find information about that at legacybooksonline.com. If you would like to receive a copy of John's book and it is time for you to start or renew a membership on KERA to KERA, you can give us a call right now at 1-800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org, make a $120 contribution or above, and you can choose this as your thank you gift. We know lots of fans. We didn't have time to get to all the people who wanted to express their appreciation for John. We know you're out there, so you can put these two things together and help KERA and get a copy of this book.
1-800-456-5372. Online at kera.org. You know what, Chris? I got an email early this morning from Danny in Dallas. Danny said that he drives around a lot during the day, and he listens to KERA. And he's been listening for a long time, but he had never joined the station. And he decided this morning that he was going to join the station. And he asked me a question, and I wrote him back. He said, does it matter which show I give during? And I said, well, you know, you can certainly make a gift of support during one of your favorite shows to support that show, but that programming decisions here aren't based on how much is raised. We do tally how much each hour brings in, but it's not you know, like a vote or a competition or this show's getting canceled or whatever. But I just wanted to say thanks to Danny. Hopefully his membership came in sometime today, or if his favorite show hasn't aired yet, he's going to join sometime today. So the offer still stands. You can email me, tell me why you're joining, or maybe why you haven't, and I'll see if I can. I'd love to dialogue with you about it. But Really love to hear from you right now at 800-456-5372.
I actually have a theory about why otherwise, you know, not otherwise good people, but why people, you know, why it becomes so easy to kind of ignore our telling you 1,000 times over the course of 10 days or something that we're trying to raise money. And I think it may have to do with the fact that we don't have the ability to sort of look you in the eye and say to you one-on-one. Radio's pretty close to one-on-one, but mm-hmm. but we can't say to you one-on-one, hey, would you like to be a member? Would you like to support KERA? I think almost everybody listening, if that happened, would go, oh my goodness, yes. Not out of a sense of shame or guilt, but because you know it's the right thing to do. Sometimes it becomes easy for us to let all that pass by and imagine it's someone else's problem to support KERA or someone else's responsibility. We're here to tell you that we really rely as much on those of you who give $5 or $10 a month as we do on those of you who join at the friends level or who join at the major gifts level where they're doing tens of thousands of dollars. It all matters, and we're talking to each and every one of you regardless of the amount that you decide that you want to spend on the station. 1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number.
I think it's something like, I'll use the highway metaphor. I think it's something that has to do with the modern human condition. Everyone's a good person and everyone's a great driver to themselves. But on the highway, you see people do crazy stuff. And then you'll realize sometime that, oh, you know, like I'll be driving and I'll accidentally cut somebody off. Like, oh my gosh, I cut somebody off. And wasn't thinking because head down, focus, got to get where I'm going, got to do my thing. And we sort of become inured to all the things around us day in, day out. And I think that that's the same thing with the membership campaign. You know what? You've got responsibilities. You've got bills to pay. You've got things you've got to get done. And it's, you know, it's something that you don't really have time for maybe. But it only takes a minute or two to do it. And I think about the way that people act after, you know, there's some sort of shocking event and people sort of realize for a second, hey, we're all in this together. And that's what we're trying to tell you is that we're all in this together with public radio, with staying on top of what's going on in our world. And we hope that you will help support this aspect of your life. Just do take a moment. Just pause for just a second. Go online to KERA.org and join in a community where everyone's sort of saying, yeah, you know what? This is a shared responsibility. I'm going to call 800-456-5372. I'm going to go ahead and take my share of responsibility.
That's a great point. Yeah, don't wait for a crisis to wake you up. We know that it takes you a little bit outside of your habit, that you don't call us every day and make a contribution, but it really is, the effort involved is really slight. You just pick up the phone, make a 2-minute call to 1-800-456-5372 or go to KERA.org. You'll be supporting your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1 Dallas-Fort Worth Denton, and online at KERA.org.
And someone who calls or goes online during this drive is going to win a trip to London to tour the BBC studios. It's a fantastic opportunity if you're a fan of the BBC, a fan of great radio and great journalism, and just sort of that's the quintessential, that's where it kind of started, this whole like overreaching worldwide network of reporting. If you're the winner, you'll tour the BBC studios in London. You'll fly there nonstop from DFW on British Airways in business class, you and a friend, and you'll also get a $1,000 Marriott gift card. So someone's going to win that. If you're the winner, it's going to be a lot of fun, and we will announce the winner, and we'll draw and announce the winner right after the drive ends, as soon as we raise the remaining about $190,000 that needs to go, and we're going to be able to do that probably in the next day or two, if you'll call 800-456-5372.
Want to thank those of you who have called, including Sukumar Bamala in Frisco, Floyd Smith in McKinney, Ethan Kilgore in Dallas, David Kanatsar in Carrollton, Jennifer Sipple in Dallas, Carolyn Meyer in Fort Worth. These folks recognize the importance of public radio in their lives and in their community and have made the 2-minute effort to support the station, and we are sincerely appreciative of that.
1-800-456-5372 is the place where you can do that. You can join Vincent Van Horn in Dallas. You can join Janice Srivathanakul in, Richardson. John Turner in Dallas. Harold Marshall in Dallas. And Tracy Evans in Plano. They've joined us. They've come over to the other side.
They're on the other side of the outdoor coliseum that is public radio.
That's right. They've paid their admission price. Yeah, and they can sort of, you know, see their contribution at work as they listen to KERA, and they understand what we're talking about. We know you understand it too. We know that you're just busy, and you're going to have a moment just here momentarily to pick up the phone and call 800-456-KERA.
Remember that among the thank you gifts we can offer you are American Airlines Advantage Miles. So whether or not you happen to win a trip on British Airways to London, you might be able to take a trip using some additional miles that you get. At the $120 level, we can offer you 500 Advantage Miles as your thank you gift if you're interested. 1,000 miles for a $240 contribution. For a $360 contribution, 2,000 miles. So the number just keeps going up. And at the $1,500 friends level, we have 7,500 miles. So think about that. 1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. You can also support us online at kera.org. Thank you.